So now if you look at, you know, how I spend my weeks or how I spend my days or whatever, you'll probably think I'm a robot. Like, I know at the beginning of the week, I know exactly what I'm going to do during the week. At the end, my assistant will send me what percentage of time I spent on every topic. I tell her I want to spend 33% of my time on hiring, and then maybe it depends every week. But and I make sure that she follows that. Every Thursday afternoon, I go back home. I don't have a computer. I just have a notebook. I don't even have my phone. And I step back and think about what are the biggest opportunities I'm not seeing forefront. What are the biggest risks I'm not thinking about? And it requires so much discipline for me to do all these things because, you know, there is always something super important I need to do, like this super amazing candidate I should close, and that seems to be more important than, you know, going back to my backyard and writing on a notebook. But it's actually not.
Hello, this is Vlad from The Family, the family for European ambitious entrepreneurs. We support startup founders in the long run. You're building a startup and you want to reach the stars, join us. Once you've joined us, you stay with us. It's for life, not like 3, 6, or 12 months. And we will be here for you, especially during hard times. We will be here to make magic happen, to make the most out of game-changing moments for you. More than 600 startups joined the family in the past 7 years, from various industries and various sizes. If you look at the biggest ones that came, it's names like Algolia, Captain Train that was bought by Trainline, and Payfit, for example. And this podcast is a way for us to change things in Europe, to show what's possible, to create the best startup educational content you can dream of. Having Mathilde Collin, the CEO of San Francisco-based startup Front, being interviewed by Erica Batista, our director at The Family, was a blast. Mathilde is a boss when it comes to startup culture. Read one of her Medium articles and you'll be instantaneously addicted. Her perspective on how discipline, work-life balance, and happiness at work matter is mind-blowing. To be honest, she's one of the people I can listen to or watch talking non-stop. This is the level of inspiration we're looking for here. And she's building an amazing company, Front, reinventing emailing with almost 200 people in the team right now, and a strong $66 million Series B round that was completed last year. An absolutely perfect example of human dedication and smart execution.
Welcome, Mathilde. I'm so happy to have you here at The Family today.
I'm super happy to be here.
I think I did a pretty bad job at pitching Front in my intro, so I want to rectify that. Can you tell us what Front is? How would you define it?
I've struggled for the past 6 years doing it, so I don't know if I'll do a good job. But at Front, we're reinventing email for the way teams work. So you can imagine that you take an inbox like Gmail and Outlook, and you add things like collaboration, workflows, accountability, transparency, and the hope is that every person that uses email at work can eventually use Front and be more efficient and more engaged.
Okay, I think that was good. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. So how did it all start, and how long ago?
So it started 5.5 years ago in Paris, where I met my co-founder, who is the CTO of the company. At that point, we had no idea we would come to the US. I had never traveled outside Europe, so it was already a big deal for me to start a company. I had no idea Front would be just as big as it is today. So we started in Paris. We launched a product, so the only thing I was doing in the early days was writing some content so that people could come to our website and sign up for the product, and then I could ask them, what are you looking for? And then the only thing that my co-founder was doing was building a product. And so that's all, zero distraction. And we did that for probably, like, I don't know, 4 months. It was very depressing because we would get people interested, show them the product, they wouldn't be interested. So then I would tell my co-founder, we're one feature away from having our first customer. And so we would build the feature, then they would try, not use it. So I would tell him we're one feature away now. And it just went through that cycle for the first 4 months until we had our first customer. And then we went through YC.
So what was the first idea that you had? How do you come across this idea?
So the first idea has always been we want to reinvent email, and we need to find a specific pain point, as narrow as it is, so that we can enter the market, because it's a huge market, and no company has ever managed to just build a company and make money out of an email product for businesses. So we chose shared email addresses as the way we would enter the market. So we built an email client, and we said, if you have a shared email address, like contact@sales@, you can add it to front, and it will be a better solution than a mailing list or help desk solution. So that's what we launched. One thing I learned, is that, so because we had such a big idea of changing how email works, and then we had such a tiny product, which was a shared inbox product, I often had a really hard time telling people. I was almost ashamed to say, oh, it's a shared inbox product. And I think you should never, never be ashamed of pitching the product the way it is, because if you always start pitching the big idea, then no one gets it, and so it won't help you get any customer, get any feedback on what you're doing. So that's something I learned the hard way, but that would be my advice.
That's a good advice, and I wanted to ask you too, like, what was the most unexpected thing about building a company? And I mean by that, like, something you thought would have been easy that was actually really hard, or something, you know, you would have thought like, oh, that's a piece of cake, and then it ended up being like really, really hard.
So I think the unexpected thing is it's hard for everyone. So I'll tell you one story. So we went through Y Combinator. Every Tuesday night, we have a dinner. Someone is speaking about their company. And so we were listening to the founders of Stripe and Airbnb and Dropbox. They seem like super successful companies. When you look at their product, it seems super obvious that it's a good idea. And they were telling us, like, one, it's always been hard. We would, you know, wake up one out of 3 days wondering if it really makes sense to keep doing what we're doing. And I thought, okay, if these companies face such hardship, then you should stop wondering if it's normal that it's hard, because it's hard for everyone. And that's one. Two, it just gets harder. So if you think that once you hire people, you raise money, like whatever, you have so many customers, so now if one customer churns, it's not a big deal, or like whatever, wrong. 100% wrong. Like, the stakes are higher, and so everything is harder.
Yeah, that's a fallacy that most entrepreneurs think. Like, oh, when I raise my Series A, everything will be easier. Right.
Never. Because the truth is, a startup is, the definition is, it needs to grow. And, you know, if you want to grow every year at pretty much the same rate, then what you need to do every year is all the previous years combined, which means that what has worked in the past won't work in the future. But if you screw up big, so then every year it's harder.
Yeah, it reminds me also of this phrase, quote from Paul Graham that says that the default state of a startup is death. And you're just trying to, it sounds awful, like nobody's going to launch a company after this. But I find it, you know, very, very encouraging on the opposite when you say just, it's hard for everyone.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so something that I found while, you know, I was researching for this interview is I looked at your company's Glassdoor. I don't know if everybody here knows Glassdoor is a website where you can rate employers and companies. And I saw that your company, you have 100% approval rate, and I don't know how that's even possible. And also, you have, your company has a 99% recommendation rate on Glassdoor. So, you know, first, what's the secret? And second, I wanted to know about, you know, your core values as a leader.
Yes, so it's probably something I could talk about for 5 hours. And if you're expecting me to say, so this is how to do it, and then go do it, and you have that, that won't happen. So I can tell you a few things. So one, I deeply care about it. And so the reason I started this company is because I wanted to create an environment where people would be happy to come to work every day, starting with me being happy to come to work every day. And so I think the moment you start caring so much about something, then usually you'll do everything it takes in order to succeed. So there are a lot of values that we have at front that I think I have as a leader and led to this engagement. So the first one is transparency, and you hear a ton about transparency, but it's super easy to say you're a transparent company. It's super hard to actually be a transparent company, because, you know, it's, when things are hard, the last thing you want to do is to tell your team, because it's hard enough. So I think there are so many examples of things that we've done to always be transparent. So for example, you know, every Monday morning we have an all-hands meeting. We go over all the metrics of the business, And whether it's good or bad, they will see it. In the office, we have dashboards with everything. All our calendars are public, so there is a default trust. People can ask any question about anything at a Q&A that's anonymous, and we will get back to them. So I think this transparency builds trust, but also builds a lot of engagement because you know why you're doing what you're doing. So the first time I was asked to talk about this topic, which was how to create engagement at scale, I was like, I don't even know like why we have, it's my first company. So I emailed our like a few employees, maybe 10, and I asked them, why are you so happy? And many reasons, but the number one reason was I can see the impact of my work and I care about our mission. And so I thought that was super important because then you can really summarize it in two things. One is you need to have a mission that's clearly stated and that people care about. So at front it's work happier. And then you need to make sure that everyone understands why the work they're doing will contribute to that mission. And if they do, then they'll be happy. And it's not about, you know, how much they're paid, what benefits we have, etc. Although, like, this help. But if you think that that's why people are happy, then they won't truly be happy.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Also, you mentioned transparency clearly is one of your core values. But I was wondering, so you yourself, as a CEO, you write a lot. And you write very openly about the different aspects of running a company. And
yes.
Who did someone encourage you to do that? Where does this desire to share come from?
So, the initial reason why I started writing was I wasn't writing about my journey because no one cared. I had a company with two people and zero customers. But I started writing about the future of email because I realized that people cared about writing about email and communication. So it was a tactic to get leads, and that's it. So I wasn't doing it for anything else. And then I enjoyed it. So I actually don't know why I enjoy it. I think I enjoy it because, one, it helps me clarify my thoughts, and two, I just feel like most of the time people write things that are not interesting, and so I wanted to write interesting things. So I started sharing a lot about my journey. So now if you go on Medium, you can read pretty much everything, and you can ask me anything, I'll tell you anything. And so there are a few reasons I kept doing it. One, all I care about is the impact I have. Like, if I write to clarify my ideas, but no one is reading it, then I will stop doing it because it actually takes a lot of time. And so the fact that so many people read these articles and told me it was helpful is the number one reason why I'm writing. I'm not writing, like, now it doesn't bring any customer. It builds a brand for Front, which is good, but there are more efficient ways to do this. Mm-hmm. So the number one reason is for the impact I have. And then the other reason is just because whenever I was in a situation where I didn't know how to do something, like I wanted to raise a Series A, and I was like, I will just, you know, look online at a deck, and then I'll just do the same thing, and then I couldn't find one, and so then I built one, and I published it. It's the same for our Series B. So, like, it's also solving a problem that I had that no one was solving.
It's super interesting because it's like almost like we're following your journey as a founder, and you keep saying, like, it's my first company, and I'm only doing this for the first time. But you know, it's like you write so openly, and you guys should really go check out her Medium page. I think I found like 2 hours last week reading your Medium articles, and they're really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, so did you like it?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. I'll keep writing them.
Yeah, cool. So it was also one of the things that you talk about is, and I find really interesting because we are in an industry, as you know, that celebrates visionaries and people who have, you know, great ambitions and great visions, and all that's great. But you come out and say, well, I think discipline matters more than vision. And I find that really curious. Can you explain a little more about that?
Yeah, so many things. So one, I think I'm someone that's very disciplined, but I didn't understand why it served us so well. So recently I've been reflecting, and so I'll explain what discipline means and what I think, what impact this has. But it all started with, a few years ago, I started very occasionally investing in companies. And so then startups would email me with their updates. And then, and it was a few years ago, and then I saw a pattern where if a company sends updates at the same frequency, it can be weekly, monthly, quarterly, it doesn't even matter, with the same format, then almost every time they'll succeed, and then the moment, sometimes they write, sometimes not. One day they talk about revenue, and then the following week or month or a quarter they talk about users, then they don't succeed. And so obviously it's not black and white, it's not 100% true, and 100%, but like it was so obvious to me that I started thinking about this topic. And so the reason I think that discipline matters so much is because I think there are so many preconceived ideas about how you are successful that are wrong. And so one of them being, you'll be successful if you have a great idea and the market is ready. And like, of course you need to get a good idea. But first, the only thing you need to have is a product that's solving a pain point. It doesn't even matter how big your market is, because the truth is you'll have all the opportunity you want to expand this market. And so, you know, we went from shared inbox to email to operating system. And I didn't start the company thinking that the vision I would pitch would be that big. So it doesn't matter. So in that sense, vision doesn't matter as much. What matters is what pain point you are initially solving. And once you know what pain point you're initially solving, then the only reason why you will grow is because you'll be insanely disciplined about doing so. And so there are just so many ways you can be distracted. You can lie to yourself, which I feel like is the biggest thing that entrepreneurs do. It's so hard that you don't want to face the reality of our revenue is not growing, our biggest customer churned, but you have to, because if you don't, then you'll fail. And I think having the discipline of, you know, always sticking to one metric, always looking at it, always communicating around it, and having absolutely no excuse and no distraction, but making this metric grow, especially when you're super early, I think is the reason why we've been successful. So now if you look at, you know, how I spend my weeks or how I spend my days or whatever, you'll probably think I'm a robot. Like, I know at the beginning of the week, I know exactly what I'm going to do during the week. At the end, my assistant will send me what percentage of time I spent on every topic. I tell her I want to spend 33% of my time on hiring, and then maybe it depends every week, but, and I make sure that she follows that. Every Thursday afternoon, I go back home. I don't have a computer. I just have a notebook. I don't even have my phone. And I step back and think about what are the biggest opportunities I'm not seeing forefront. What are the biggest risks I'm not thinking about? And it requires so much discipline for me to do all these things, because you know there is always something super important I need to do, like this super amazing candidate I should close, and that seems to be more important than, you know, going back to my backyard and writing on a notebook. But it's actually not. So I've become very convinced that discipline was a huge reason why we were successful, and it's always hard for me to say, you know, that's why everyone will be successful, but I know that that's why we've been successful so far.
In your own case, yeah. That's super. I mean, I find it super inspiring. I'm not a disciplined person at all, so I want to learn how to be like you. I know, like, that actually reminds me of one of our top portfolio companies. The CEO, he sends us a report every Thursday. And I remember the story of one Thursday, it was Christmas Eve, and he was on a mountain skiing, so we didn't get the report, and we were like, huh, you know? And then the guy was like, I'm so sorry, there was no signal, here's the report at like midnight. So, you know, it's it really goes to show that discipline can make a difference, and even in the, you know, in the small details. But I was wondering, so one of the things you mentioned is that you make yourself accountable. So you have your assistant, you tell her, okay, so I want to spend, I don't know, 30% of my time hiring. And then at the end of the week, she tells you like the breakdown of where you spent your time and how you failed or accomplished this. Is there any other ways you make yourself accountable or more disciplined?
Yeah, so first of all, I don't have any notification anywhere. Like, I don't have any notification on my phone, on my apps. And so then I have a lot of time for focus work. And I think you can, you know, you need that, because otherwise you tell yourself, I'll do this and that, but then, okay, you have a notification, seems important, click on it, and then you've been distracted. So I think that helps a lot, and just in my personal life and professional life, I think it helps me be healthy. Two, it's just like everything in my day is scheduled in advance, so even time to think, or like email time, and or time to think about our culture, which seems very abstract, but if I don't spend the time, then I'll never spend the time. And so I, like, for me, this was working. It's just making sure that, you know, I have at the top of my head all the topics I want to constantly think about and make sure that I have the time to do so. So that's one thing. That's my own discipline. But then I need to show that to the team, because if I so strongly believe that that makes people successful, then I want to encourage them to do the same, and I want to force them to do the same. So the communication I do to my team is, for example, at the beginning of every week, at the same time every Monday morning, all my direct reports will receive an email called Top of Mind, and then I tell them, this week, here is what's top of mind for me. For example, closing our head of sales, plus preparing for the board meeting, plus whatever. And always at the same time. The reason I do that is because if they know what's important to me, then usually that should be reflected in what they're working on, because that's how it works. So by sending this email, you know, every Monday morning at the same time, there is a company-wide email. Our all hands on Monday morning is always the same format, and we just follow it so that we
make
sure.
And you wrote a Medium post on how to conduct an all hands meeting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, I think it's there are just so many small things that either are for me or for people that work directly for me or for people that are at the company. And then they see the value, and so they do the same, so their team sees it, so then they do it.
I want to spend a little bit more time talking about your Thursday habit.
Sure.
Yeah, can you tell us what it is? I'm sorry for the mystery, guys.
So it's pretty simple. So on Thursday at 1 p.m., I go back home, and that's it. So I go back home, and so then the problem is I'm thinking about a million things. So first, I need to stop thinking so I can go running, play the piano, have a shower, like whatever, probably like 30 minutes. And then I have an hour and a half where I just have a notebook. And it's super hard, because I think in this world where you have constant notifications all the time, you forget to be by yourself with nothing else than just thinking about a specific topic. That is, what are you not thinking about? Which is a pretty hard thing to think about. So an hour and a half, and I force myself, and every time after 25 minutes, I'm bored. And I'm like, I don't have anything else. But the truth is, it doesn't matter if I start thinking about whatever, anything. Because I'm in the right state of mind, and so I will have one brilliant idea for like 30 seconds out of the entire 1.5 hours, sometimes zero. But that's enough, because I would have never had this thought or idea otherwise, and it's worth it. So I spend an hour and a half thinking about that, and just with my notebook. And what happens at the end of this 1.5 hour is I have a huge to-do list. So I started thinking about like so many things I'm not thinking about. And so then I have 1.5 hours where I do my to-do list, and or I add it to my, you know, computer to-do list. And then it's the end, and I have dinner. It's exhausting. I can't work after that. So it's like, yeah, from 1:30 to, five, six.
I mean, you touched on a very good point, which is, you know, one of the challenges of our current generation in the workplace is to find uninterrupted time to do meaningful work, which is what you do with this
company.
Yeah, and after reading, to be honest, like after reading your articles, I actually stopped all notifications.
Yeah, so that's the reason why we build Front and we don't build Slack, for example. So we also use Slack, and sometimes it's great, but I think that there are so many communication tools that are synchronous, and the expectation is, you know, for you to read it and get back to the person. That's how it's been designed, so you can't even be upset about people having this expectation. And one thing that's wonderful with email is it's asynchronous, so you can, you know, snooze it, put it in a folder, deal with it later. And I think that people actually like it. Now, there are many things they don't like about email, which is what we're trying to fix. But I do think that asynchronous is much better for efficiency and mental health.
Yeah, I agree. And so what are the technologies and habits you think that, you know, promote that kind of meaningful, I mean, besides Front and cutting notifications, is there anything else?
So One, I try to lead by example. I was on PTO for 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. I think taking some time off is insanely important. There are many things that we do at Front where, you know, we tell people as soon as they arrive at the company that they should first take care of themselves and then think about work and not the other way around. So, and then, you know, we give a credit every month so that they can exercise because I think it's important. Mm-hmm. We do lunch and learns and we talk about how food impacts the way you feel. So, yeah, it's a lot of small things, mm-hmm. but it's most importantly at the core of the product we build. So
yeah, it reminds me of this book by the guys. I forget the name of the company. It's called "Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work." You know this?
No.
Well, anyway, it's a book that they talk about how most startup offices today are designed to have people spend as much time as possible in the office, where they, you know, build like games and yeah. cafeterias, and what you said sounds like you want people, you know, to...
Yeah, so it's actually something super trendy. I don't know if you know Alexis Ohanian, the yeah. founder of Reddit. Now, all he does is, so one day he started tweeting about the fact that people should stop thinking that hustling is so great, and now all he talks about whenever he's invited is about making sure that people have a personal life because mm-hmm. and they spend the time because that's how they'll be so good at their job. Another person that I'm a huge fan of is Justin Kahn, who is the creator of Justin TV. And he was a YC partner when I was in YC. He was actually my partner. And then, I don't know, I think he burnt out. And so then realized that he completely had to change everything he was doing, starting meditation every day, changing how he eats, and has been writing a ton about it. So if you want to follow him on Twitter, like every day he tweets multiple times a day about how he's building Atrium, which is a successful company that went from, you know, 0 to 200 employees in 2 years, and so great, but at the same time will spend enough time to take care of himself, and I find him very inspiring.
It is. That also reminds me of you wrote a post on, you know, how life is greater than the company you're running, which was about you know, a topic that's not easy to talk about when your co-founder got sick. And also, on a more personal note, happier note, it's an emotional roller coaster, but you were off. You said like you were on vacation recently because you were on your honeymoon. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
On being married. Can you, talk about that and how you manage, you know, to have this work-life balance?
Yeah, so I think it's, I struggle so much with it because, I mean, just yesterday night, I went to sleep at 5:30 and then woke up at 8. So, like, you know, I can be the person saying, yeah, you should sleep and exercise and then look at what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So, one, I think it's, even if I say it and I try super hard, like, the truth is, it's every day I need to fight. Because when you're starting a company and or you're at a startup and you care about it, then all... everything that's in your head is your company and you're constantly thinking about it. And so... It matters, so it's normal, plus it's a moment in your life where you should probably do this because you've decided to do it. So for me, that's how I was living until, I don't know, 2017. And then my co-founder got sick, and then he had a cancer. It was super advanced. We didn't know much about whether he would make it, and then now he is cancer-free, so it's a great story. But it's the first time I realized that it was just a job, and I think there, like, we shouldn't expect something like this, which is super terrible, for us to understand that it's just a job. Like, the truth is, you have a life, and you know your family and your health and your friends. All of that is more important than your job, and it's the truth. And you need to make the time for it. And the only way I have managed to do it is to be super disciplined about it again. So every morning I wake up, have a shower, and then meditate for 10 minutes. And then every weekend, at least one day, I don't work at all. I don't have any, I actually delete my apps so that, because if I don't delete it, like I check my emails and Slack and then it's dead. Like,
so you delete the apps and then you reinstall them
yeah.
after. Wow.
Pretty painful. Now we're growing and so we have SSO, so it's a nightmare. But I still do it. because I think it's very important for the success of this company.
I think it's super brave that, you know, like, I guess most employees of a company would agree, like, of course I want, you know, work-life balance, but for a CEO to come out and say, you know what, this is a job, I think it's very rare.
Yeah, and I mean, so there are many, so for example, a few months ago, we had an employee that I really like, and she told me, so she was in San Francisco, and she told me, I actually don't feel great in this city, and so I'm not happy, and so I'm going to leave, and I'm going to travel. And it's always hard to hear that when it's an employee that you think is great. But then I really took that as an opportunity during our all hands to tell the team, one, this person is leaving, and two, like, I really admire the choice she's made. I think it's very courageous. I think it's easy when you like a job, and she really loved her job, to just, you know, keep doing it. But then you have to step back sometime and make really tough decision. Like, she doesn't know if she'll find a job that, you know, will make her happier, and she told me that. But at the same time, she knows that she can find, you know, a way of life that makes her happier, and I would encourage her to do that.
Mm. You spoke earlier about your YC experience and talking to Justin Kan. I wanted you to tell us about, so you were working, you know, doing the inbox, reinventing the inbox, and you got to meet the guy who actually invented Gmail at Google.
Yes.
And he gave you some advice.
Yeah, so that was, so one of the founders of YC is Paul Bohite, PB, and he was the guy who created Gmail 15 years ago. And so when I went into YC and when we were accepted, I was telling everyone, my friends and my family, so happy because I'm building this email company and I'm going to meet the founder of Gmail, and I'll be able to ask, you know, all these questions I've been struggling with. So from a strategy standpoint, should we do this? Should we do that? Should we do that? And so here come the times, you know, maybe 3 weeks after we joined YC, where we have a meeting with him. And I tell him, so this is what we're doing, and then now I have this existential question, should I do A, B, C? And he told me, just follow your growth. And I was like, great, thank you so much. Like, I really didn't need the founder of Gmail to tell me that. But I understood afterwards that, you know, that's actually the best advice he can give me, because, and I think YC's, I don't know, is YC's slogan, I don't know how you say it, is make something people want. And it seems obvious, like, make something people want, okay, thank you. But it's actually the only thing that matters. And so the reason why Paul told me that is because, yes, he has some knowledge about Gmail, but when he created it 15 years ago, the reality of how people work today is different than 15 years ago. Two, he actually doesn't know anything about our business. So I know our market, I know our customers better than him. And as much as I respect him, you know, he can't tell me, it would be a big mistake. And in my journey, so many people have, like, I think you have a tendency to be willing to give advice, but you need to really take them with a grain of salt because they don't know anything, you're the only one to know. And so follow your growth is just like the most pragmatic thing someone can tell you, yet the most relevant thing someone can tell you. So I thought that was useful, and then after this moment, I stopped thinking that, you know, we'll be successful when I get to talk to XYZ, mm-hmm. and or when Sequoia invests in my company, and Brent Schreier is joining our board, and Brent Schreier was the first board member of Dropbox and Qualtrics, which are two companies that are widely successful, horizontal products, SaaS businesses, so many things that are relevant to us. And so I was like, yeah, Brent Schreier will give me so many, you know, advice on how to succeed. Zero. And, but he also set this expectation, and I think you should never think, oh, I'm meeting this person, that's amazing. This person will solve my problems.
Your advisors will be happy to.
No, they can do a ton for you, though. So for example, you know, one of the things that Brian Schreier does for me is, one of my biggest focus right now is to hire more experienced people. I've never worked with more experienced people before. And also is very convincing when he says that Front is the most promising company he has invested in, given he has invested in Dropbox and Qualtrics. So if he can help me hire these executives, then it's super useful. But that's very different from telling me, okay, so these are the targets you should hit, and this is the segment you should target, and this is the messaging you should use. That he can't tell me.
Yeah. And how big is Front as a company today, just to give us an idea?
I think 115 employees.
115 employees?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you are, I guess, all over the world with clients all over the world.
Yes, we have 5,000 paying customers, 40% in Europe, 60% outside Europe.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you have an office here in France?
Yes, there are some people from our office that are here today.
Where are they?
I wanted to say hi.
Yeah.
yeah, that's why I'm here, actually. It's because I wanted to come and... So we have a new office.
Nice. Where is it?
It is Strasbourg-Saint-Denis, 347 rue Saint-Martin. you can come and visit us. And yeah, so I wanted to spend time with them, get to know the people I've never met, and tomorrow I'll do all hands and share a few things that I hope will be useful.
Cool, so you're obviously French. I wanted to ask, what's it like being a Frenchie in the Valley? Like, what's your experience? What's the reputation? Anything?
So the only funny thing, so I don't have anything meaningful to say about it. So my experience is, it's exactly the same as, it's like, what is it like being a woman tech for me, and what is it like being French? Like, the truth is, what I've found is being a CEO of a company is insanely hard. And then whether you're French or not, we can make it, you know, slightly easier sometimes and slightly harder. But in the grand scheme of things, it's like being a CEO of a startup is super hard. And that's the core of your job. The only funny thing that people tell me after they know me and they're comfortable telling me this is French people do have the reputation of being like grumpy. And so then when people meet with me for the first time, they're always like, oh, I'm so surprised. It doesn't seem like a French person smiling.
Because you're nice.
Yeah, because I'm nice. So I think that there is this cliche that I find interesting.
I don't know why people think that.
French, I know,
people,
right?
Are very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I was also, let me check just my notes. What's the most exciting thing about the future of France right now?
So I think for me, there are two things that are exciting, and that's how I describe the opportunity of France to whoever is considering helping joining. So the potential for France is huge. There are like 1 billion email users. If you are installed on everyone's computer and you're part of their workflow, then if you deeply care about changing how people work, you can go beyond email. And we're in a great position to do that. That's where we want to go. And then there is where we're at today. And I think where we're at today is we have healthy foundations in a sense that we're financially healthy, we are growing, the people are amazing, they're both talented and they're low ego and they know what they don't know. We have enough customers that we can learn so much. And so there is this situation, which is we have great foundations and a very healthy company and this ambition. And what I'm excited about is I'm very competitive. And so knowing that we can get there drives me. And two is I deeply care about people, and knowing that we can get there by working with these people and knowing that, you know, just tomorrow that there could be one person joining that could, because we're so early, change something meaningful that would really impact our trajectory from here to here is what drives me.
That's a beautiful vision. I mean, who wouldn't want to work for a company like that? Mathilde, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I was already a fan.
Thank you.
And now even more. Thank you.
Mathilde is a no-brainer. Follow her everywhere, especially on Medium. I promise you won't be disappointed. And you can follow us too. Subscribe to this podcast and please tell us what did you think about it by rating it or commenting it. Check our Medium and YouTube channel. It's called Startup Food. Finally, our website thefamily.co is the place you should go to if you're looking for more details about what we do. And of course, if you want to apply to The Family. Join us and see you next week.